So parents get frustrated by their kids. I know that's news to you. You probably didn't know that. Sometimes parents get frustrated by their kids. It happens. Sometimes. The kid will go off to a friend's house and will, I grew up in the South, so I'm going to say it the way we show his rear end. There. Sanitize for your protection. Right? She'll go off and she will be at a friend's house in front of the parents and disobey, go to school, and you get called in. Isn't that fun? My poor parents got called in on me. Kindergarten. Seriously. Kicked a kid. Well, he hit me first. But the reason parents get frustrated, one of the reasons is because kids are a reflection of the parents, right? What are you making people look? You're making them think we don't know how to raise you. Well, you're raised in a barn. It's because the kids reflect the parents. This is an easy transition, right? God is your daddy. You and I are meant to reflect. We're made in the image of God, the Imago Dei. And when you know Jesus, you're meant to reflect him. And hold on, hold on. This isn't about guilt. This isn't about, oh my gosh, I feel the pressure again. You're not meant to be perfect. Only God is perfect. You're meant to be authentic. You're meant to be real. And when you screw up, not if, you go to God and you say, Lord, I'm so sorry. You repent and you turn back to him. And man, you're going to repent if you know Jesus, if you really walk with him. I'm not talking about if you got some religion. If you know Jesus, if you walk with him, the whole of the Christian life, Martin Luther said, is repentance. You're going to continually, yeah, Lord, I screwed up again. Lord, that thought wasn't right. Lord, I shouldn't have waved with just one finger. I mean, all of that is continual. Lord, I'm so sorry. It's going to happen, right? We are the mirror for God, and we're supposed to be. In Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, Paul, 2 Corinthians, Paul will call us ambassadors for Christ. We represent Jesus to our world. We're the mirror. I want to show you the four guys we talked about last week and talk about how they reflected, one specifically reflected the glory of God when he had an opportunity to do other things. We kind of swerved into this thing and we looked at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and how they would not bow before the idol. But I want to back up just a little bit, one chapter before. These are four guys, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel's name is Belshazzar, which literally means the goddess Beltis will protect the king. They're given Babylonian names that correspond to Babylonian gods. Like everything is taken away from these four guys. They're Jews, they're in Jerusalem. Babylon comes in and lays waste to the land, defiles the temple, takes people and takes them out. And these four guys, these young guys, these strong guys, lose everything. They lose their culture. They lose their language. They're going to have to learn another language. They lose their dress style, their manner of, I mean, everything is gone. They become eunuchs, which means they've lost everything. They're not even going to have kids one day. Everything. Even their very names are stripped from them, their identity. And they refuse to bow, even in the small things. If you'll remember, if they go into training as eunuchs and they're going to be leaders at some point, they have to eat from the king's table, which would be a great thing, man. Sumptuous, amazing food, except Jews don't eat unclean food. And they had to take the stand. And guys, we're not going to do this. And please just test us, give us whatever is not unclean. So they wind up with vegetables and water. And God honors that. And they get stronger and bigger. And they grow in wisdom and in favor. These guys take their stand even in the small things. In fact, we read it this way. The chief eunuch gave them names. He gave them Belshazzar to Daniel, Shadrach to Hananiah, Meshach to Mishael, and Abednego to Azariah. Lost it all, but they were faithful. And here's the thing. They took their stand on food. And it would have been so easy to rationalize it, wouldn't it? Hey, man, we've lost it all. We're going to have to eat or we might die. And we could serve God better if we just compromise in this little area. We'd be here and we could, you know, witness about him and we'd shine his light. And we'd, no, we're not. No, God said you don't eat unclean foods. We're not going to do that. And they take their stand in the small things. And when you take your stand in the small things, you have to be rude about it. But when you say, here's where I'm at, and no, I'm not going to walk away. I'm not going to compromise. No, 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 you're not teaching my kindergartner sexuality. That's my job. I'm the friggin' parent. I may have swerved just a little bit. Not sorry. When you take your stand in the small things, it sets you up to be faithful when the big things come. As you've already said, I know what's right. And I'm not backing down. And we said this last week. Our faith isn't in deliverance. It's not in circumstances. Our faith is in the one who has delivered us from this. And New Testament says the domain of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of his beloved son. That's Colossians 1:13. And so they stand before the king and they're supposed to have bowed and they refused to do it. And they said, our God is well able to save us from the power of the furnace, from the power. Our God is able. We're not bowing, period. And even if he does, we're not bowing. And I want to show you how the 90-foot idol got started. So we're backing up one chapter. Let me show you this. We will do Daniel chapter 2. So if you want to follow along, we're going to hit almost every verse in that chapter. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams that troubled him, and sleep deserted him. These dreams are from God for a purpose. So the king gave orders to summon the magicians, mediums, sorcerers, and Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. The Chaldeans are Babylonian wise men. These are the same guys, the Chaldeans, if you'll remember from last week, who ratted out Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This is part of it because they're jealous. They're going to be made to look like fools because a Jewish guy, one of these eunuchs, is going to do what they can't do. When they came and stood before the king, he said to them, this is all of the wise men other than the Jews. King said, I've had a dream. I need to understand this thing. This is driving me up a wall. I know there's a meaning to it, and I don't know what the meaning to the dream is, but I know there's something going on here. The Chaldeans spoke to the king. May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we'll give the interpretation. You go to the palm reader. After she talks to you for a bit and finds out your hopes and your fears, she says, you know, I perceive that you're not going to have to be alone all your life. You're going to meet a man. Give me more money, and I'll tell you about that man. Tell us a dream. We'll interpret it for you. Dude, that one's easy, and the king is too smart for this one. He knows what they're up to. He knows they're looking to scam. The king replied to the Chaldeans, my word is final. If you don't tell me the dream and its interpretation, because the king ain't no dummy, you're going to be torn limb from limb, and your houses will be made a garbage dump. Remember that from last week? This is the king's go-to. Like, he's got no in-between. I either love you and you're amazing, or I'm going to tear you limb from limb and burn it all down. This is the king, man. This is who this guy is. But if you make the dream and its interpretation known to me, if you can tell me what I dreamed and then tell me the interpretation, you'll receive gifts, a reward, great honor from me. So make the dream and its interpretation known to me. And they're going to try a second time. Check it out. They answered a second time, may the king tell the dream to his servants and we will make known the interpretation. He goes, all you got to do is tell us, we'll tell you the interpretation. You can trust us. The king replied, I know for certain you're trying to gain some time because you see that my word is final. If you don't tell me the dream, there's one decree from you. Remember the decree? Tear you limb from limb, burn it all down. So you have conspired to tell me something false or fraudulent until the situation changes. Tell me the dream, and then I'll know that when you give me the interpretation, it's true as well. Yeah. Hey, palm reader chick, first of all, I ain't supposed to be here. I'm Christian. I don't like that. But why don't I tell you nothing about me and you guess? How about that? First one is wrong, give me my money back and double it. That works. The Chaldeans answered the king, no one on earth can make known what the king requests. Hey, how's it going to play with the king? Yeah, it's not going to play well. Consequently, no king, however great or powerful, has ever asked for anything. Man, you're just asking what's impossible. Why would you do that? No king before you has ever done that. You ever hear that as a parent growing up? Well, all the other kids get to stay up later. Hey, how did that play with you? Did that make you go, well, okay, I will too? If so, we need to get you in some parenting classes, right? Everybody else gets to do what they want. Yeah, this is not going to play well. And they go on to, they say, only the gods can do this, and they don't live in our domain, and so this can't be done, king. Sorry. Because of this, the king became violently angry. You notice this guy? Last week it was a furious rage. Right now it's I'm just saying we might need to get him some meds. That's all. I'm just a little melatonin, something. Just something to help him mellow out just a bit. He gave orders to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. Now, not just the people he called, but even the Jewish exiles who live among them. They're all going to have to die. Every single one of them got to be executed. The decree was issued that the wise men were to be executed, and they searched for Daniel and his friends to execute them as well. And this is how Daniel gets involved. Daniel speaks to Arioch, who is the captain of the king's guard and the captain of the executioners, and the Bible says that he speaks with great tact. He doesn't say, he's not defensive, "Hey, I can't believe you would do this, don't do this to us, please." He does none of that. He says, "Well, why is the decree from the king so harsh? Like, what's going on?" He's looking for information. This is really, really smart. Arioch explained the situation to Daniel. He didn't have to do that. Daniel is a Jewish exile. He's a second-class citizen. But because he spoke to him, listen, because he spoke to him well, he got a good response. Man, there's some wisdom in that for you and I. Somebody coming against you, wanting to hurt you. I'm not always the best in this. Most of us aren't. This guy's smart. So Daniel went and asked the king to give him some time so he could give the king interpretation. All right, that's wise, right? You want to kill us? At least give me some time. Let me see if I can figure this thing out for you. Now, the king wants to know this thing. It's driving him up a wall. He's not even sleeping at night. He's had this dream, and it has freaked him out. So Daniel bought the time. Now, what do you do if you're Daniel? And you're Daniel, and you're taking care of your friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. What do you do? Well, maybe you make a run for it when they're not looking. I've seen movies where they do that. Maybe you go out into the desert. Maybe you get away. Maybe you go a different direction than they thought you would. Maybe you make something up and you just hope, like, I'm just going to throw some stuff against the wall and hope it sticks. Well, King, I think you had a dream about a thing. Okay. And the thing was silver, gold. It was gold. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Maybe you do that. Maybe you just throw. Check out his first action. The first thing he does, he's bought time. The very first place he goes, his go-to is this. Daniel went to his house and told his friends Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, that's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, about the matter, urging them to ask the God of the heavens for mercy concerning this mystery. His first response, I need some help. Let's go to God together. Guys, let's pray. Our help is God. It's not our wisdom, our ability to be good escape artists, as the scriptures say, our BS ability. That's a message version. That's not it. His very first response is, let's go to God. That's where it starts. That's not his last ditch effort. That's his start. Mirrors reflect. That's what they do. Daniel is there to be a mirror for who God is, to reflect his glory to his culture, even though it's very unfair, it's very wrong. Daniel's reflecting the God to whom he is committed and for whom he lives to glorify. And it matters. Here's the thing, because Daniel's not escaping, he's not fighting back, he's going to God, and then he's going to go to the king. Because of the way in which he does this, he's going to win favor. And here's what you need to know. Birth of Jesus, remember who comes? We three men of Orient are. Yeah, it sounds like a song, doesn't it? Yeah, these magi, they're Persian priests. Now, how would they have known about Messiah? Daniel and his influence in Babylon during that time, because after the Babylonian kingdom, Medo-Persian kingdom. This is what comes next. There's a reason for this. They're likely influenced by Daniel. They're going to come and they're going to worship the baby Jesus, and they're going to give gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And when Jesus and his parents need to escape to Egypt, how do they make it? Oh, they've got these treasures that'll help them to trade off for food and to be able to eat and make it during their sojourn time in Egypt. Oh, it's incredible. There are two things that you will never fully know. Think about this. The cost of your sin and the influence of your faithfulness. You'll never fully understand this side of heaven, the cost of your sin. You would say, yeah, but nobody knows, and I'm not hurting anybody. And let me just say it once again. I've been saying it for several weeks now. That has never been the standard. That's not God's. Oh, I'm not hurting anybody. God says, okay, then do whatever you want. That's never been the standard. There are things that God says you don't get to hate people in your heart. I'm not hurting anybody. Well, first of all, that bitterness will show through, and it'll affect everyone near you. Not hurting anybody. You'll never know the cost of your sin in the way that you speak to others, the way that you react when you're not spirit-led, when you're not walking with Jesus. But you'll also never know the influence of your faithfulness when you take it on the chin for Jesus, and you love them anyway, and you pray for them anyway, and you refuse to hate. And when it's unfair, and you don't make yourself a martyr on Facebook, but you just deal with it, and you love, and you're faithful, you'll never know the influence of your faithfulness. But one day, you're going to hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." These are the people that you reached. These are the people you encouraged. This is somebody who was going to take their life, and they didn't. This was, you'll never know. So Daniel urged them to ask the God of the heavens for mercy concerning this mystery, his friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The mystery was then revealed to Daniel in a vision at night, and Daniel praised the God of the heavens and declared. So he's going to break into a praise song, and we're going to look at just a little bit of it. May the name of God be praised forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to God. Did you catch that? He didn't say, look, I'm amazing. I prayed and God, I am a channel of his grace. I know things that nobody else knows. I'm amazing. No, he says, may God be praised. In fact, if I have wisdom, if I have power, it comes from him and it's his. And I'm just entrusted with it for a period of time. Oh, man, it's great humility, and that's reality. That's the way it is. He changes the times and seasons. He removes kings. This is important. Listen, church. He removes kings, and he establishes kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. Now, the song continues, and we're going to skip just a little bit. But here's the point. He removes kings, and he establishes kings. Let me ask you something, church. Listen, what's your part in that? What's your part in that? He removes kings. He establishes kings. You don't really have a part. I know we're American, and we're going to vote, and we're going to make sure, and we're going to advocate. And, hey, man, have at it. Have at it. How does that work out for you? Yeah, go ahead and do your stuff. I got a civic duty, and people died that you could vote. And your part is to be faithful to the God who has called you and to what he has called you to. You mirror the true king. And really, as much as you vote, as much as you try, as much as you get on Facebook and advocate and all the rest, you're not called to change the universe. Empires rise, empires fall. Kings rise, kings fall. Presidents rise, presidents fall. Sometimes they fall up steps. It's fun to watch. I'm just saying. Yeah. But this is huge, man. This sets us free. I want you to catch this. One of our greatest sources of anxiety, stress, and worry. I'll put this forth. You pray it through and see if it's true. One of our greatest sources of anxiety, stress, worry is that of trying to terraform our world for our own comfort, and we were never called to that. So we'll get on social media, or we will talk to people, and we will go on and on about those who drive slow in the left lane. And yes, they ought to go to jail. I agree with you. If there's a law, I'm voting for it. And if that's you, God bless your little heart. You need to know Jesus. But nonetheless, I'm not going to stop people from doing it, and neither are you, no matter how much I talk about it. It may drive me up a wall if I get people on their phone when they're driving, because I know they're going to kill somebody or something, run into somebody, mess up somebody's day. I'm going to be in traffic for an hour trying to get on 460 towards Bonsack because somebody was on their phone and rear-ended somebody, and now we're all trying to go around them. You know what? It doesn't matter how frustrated I am. I was never called to terraform my world for my own comfort. And the reason it's frustrating is because I can't. I can't change other people's behavior, and I wasn't called to it. And it gets really ugly when religion tries to do that outside of Jesus. Are you tracking with me? We're going to let those people know they're not allowed to cuss. If they cuss, we're going to disfellowship them and talk bad about them. Hey, dude, did you know gossip is also sin? I'm just saying. I'm going to get those people not to drink because if they take that devil's juice, I'm going to get people to... Guys, religion loves to guilt and manipulate, and it's always ugly when it does it. Are there things that are true and good and right? Absolutely. You know how we do that? In relationship. Hey, man, I'm seeing this in your life. This is what the scriptures say. How can I help you walk this thing out? Humbly, and I'm coming alongside you. And if you say no, I'll back up and pray. I can't make you do a thing. And if I guilt and manipulate you into something, somebody else can guilt and manipulate you right out of it. Jesus has to change the heart. And that's the difference between religion and the faith that we hold. Christ transforms us from the inside out. Truth is still truth. It never stops being truth. But we're busy trying to change people. We're busy trying to change our workplace and the way that they do things. We're busy trying to change our friends and our government and our marriages. And none of that is the call of God. You know what the call of God is? You be faithful. Even within my own marriage, as much as I love my wife and she loves me and we've been together forever, like we were there when they invented dirt and we said, add water, it'll make mud, it'll be cool. We're that old. We've been married forever. We know we can't change each other and we're not called to. We're called to respect each other's differences, love each other, and serve each other like Christ serves the church and like the church responds to Christ. That's what we're called to do. And it frees you. Man, if I could just get him to stop. Baby, how's that working out for you? Been about 3 decades. It doesn't work, right? You can pray. But at best, you can just hope that I'll serve you according to your needs and you'll serve me according to my needs. It's not about comfort, but faithfulness to God. So God establishes kings. God removes kings. If you're like me, you're looking at our country and going, oh my goodness. Like I, when I look and I think about our country, the picture I have in my head is that meme of Jesus with his head just doing the face palm, like, really? Really, guys? Gave you a great country, really? Pray. Speak if you wish. Advocate if you wish. Vote if you desire. But you're not meant to carry the weight of what others do. You're not. And you can't. Sure, advocate, absolutely. Like if it's school and they're teaching my kids things that I don't want them teaching, dude, that's my job. You don't get to do that. I got no problem going to the school and talking. Seriously. If it gets bad, I got no problem removing my kid. But I'm probably not going to change the whole school system as much as I may wish to. Right? And you can go on and you can apply it to other things as well. You are free from the weight of terraforming your environment for your own comfort. And that'll set you free. Because then the only choice is how do I respond to the world that I'm in and how do I live faithfully in that world? Daniel says to Arioch, because he's got the interpretation now, don't destroy the wise men of Babylon. Bring me before the king. I'm going to give him the interpreter. I got it. I'll tell him. Arioch quickly, now watch what he does. Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said to him, I have found a man among the I did this, king. He's setting himself up to look good, right? I found a man among the Judean exiles who can let the king know the interpretation. King said to Daniel in reply, whose name was Belshazzar, the goddess Beltis will protect the king is what that means. Are you able to tell me the dream I had and its interpretation? And I love what Daniel says, and I picture him saying it really quickly, because he says, no wise man, medium, magician, or diviner is able to make known to the king the mystery he has asked about. Like if you stop there, the king is really, man, he dead. He's going to kill you, man. He's going to stab you in the heart with a spear. You gone. So the very next thing he says, and I just picture it really quickly, is this. But there is a God in heaven who reveals the mysteries, and he has let King Nebuchadnezzar know what will happen in the last days. Your dream and the visions that came into your mind as you lay in your bed were these. Your Majesty, while you were in your bed, thoughts came into your mind about what will happen in the future. The revealer of mysteries has let you know what will happen. Now here's the thing, check it. Daniel had an opportunity to better his position. You know, King, I prayed about it, and I have the answer. And you really ought to trust me for a lot of things, because I'm really good, and I've got this connection with God, and my God knows these things. And he had a chance to make himself look good in front of a murderous king. And instead he says, you know what? No one can, but God can. And it's God that's letting you know this. I'm just a channel. There's humility in this. He's not bettering his position in front of a king that he knows is murderous. God never raises you up. God never gives you the mic. God never spotlights you just for you. Stop and think about this. They're pointing to you at work about how great you do, and they want to talk. It's never just about you. You got some position at work, it's something at the school, whatever. It's never just about you. It's an opportunity to glorify him, which is your greatest blessing if you trust him. Daniel goes on, as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because I have more wisdom than anyone living. It's true. There's humility in this. But in order that the interpretation might be made known to the king and that you may understand the thoughts of your mind. This is huge. This principle, it came from God, so glory goes to God. And taking it for myself robs God of the praise that is due him, the glory that is due him. Are you following me? When I say, oh, but I'm just so smart, me know lots of stuff. Dude, who gave you the ability to have that kind of intellect? Who gave you the ability to be in places where you could learn and where you could grow? Who let you grow? Like, nobody knocked on the door of the womb and said, hey, can I be born in America, maybe middle class, so I could go to good schools and I could have access to libraries? Man, it's all a blessing from God. Praise always goes back to him. Like, I'm pretty sure Shaq didn't say, Mommy, could I be really tall one day and play basketball? It doesn't work that way. Lord, thank you that you genetically gifted me so I can do these things and gave me the opportunity. Man, humility. God exalts the humble. He resists the proud. Your Majesty, he says, as you were watching, suddenly a colossal statue appeared. He's telling him the dream. That statue, tall and dazzling, was standing in front of you, and its appearance was terrifying. The head of the statue was pure gold. Its chest and arms were silver. Its stomach and thighs were bronze. Its legs were iron. Its feet were partly iron and partly fired clay. So he sees this huge thing in his dream, and Daniel's telling him what he saw. As you were watching, a stone broke off without a hand touching it, struck the statue on its feet of iron and fired clay, and crushed them. So now the feet have been crushed on this statue in the dream. Then the iron, the fired clay, the bronze, the silver, the gold were shattered and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. Let me translate, because chaff is this stuff that'll just blow in the wind. It's just this little bit of nothing. You know what I'm talking about? It's just that, it's like if you watch dead leaves and they kind of float down in the fall, we're getting ready to hit that time. It's like something like that. No weight, easily crushed. And he says, all of the statue was shattered. Now he's getting ready to give the interpretation. The wind carried them away. Not a trace of them could be found. But the stone that struck the statue became this great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is a dream. King's going like, dang, that was a dream. Let me tell you the interpretation. Now check out this next part. This is a king. Is over all the kingdoms of all the earth. And here's what's said about him and his kingdom. Your Majesty, you are, what's that phrase? King of kings. Who do we apply that to? Oh, yeah, you're in church. The answer is always Jesus. Brown furry collects nuts for the winter. Jesus. Always Jesus, yes. King of kings, now. But back then, if you're a king over all the other kingdoms, you're king of kings. Something has changed now. A new kingdom has come. The God of the heavens has given you sovereignty, power, strength, and glory. It came from him. So be humbled and worship him is what he's saying. He alone is a giver, else you don't have it. Wherever people live, or wild animals, or birds of the sky, he has handed them over to you and made you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold. After you, there's going to arise another kingdom, inferior to yours. And then another, and a third kingdom, of bronze, which will rule the whole earth. Are you following? Following? Nations rise, nations fall. Yours won't last forever, King. There'll be another and another. But that's not what he's hearing right now. A fourth kingdom will be as strong as iron, for iron crushes and shatters everything. And like iron that smashes, it will crush and smash all the others. You saw the feet and the toes, partly of a potter's fired clay and partly of iron. It will be a divided kingdom, though some of the strength of the iron will still be in it. You saw the iron mixed with clay. The peoples will mix with one another, but will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with fired clay. Let's stop and let's talk this thing through. The head of gold, Babylon. We're told that. He says, this is you. You are the head of gold. That silver that you see, that trunk of silver, the very next kingdom that comes is a Medo-Persian kingdom. That's where we get the Persian priests. After that comes the Greek kingdom. That's bronze. And we know that a lot of the folks were Greek-speaking at the time of Christ. Paul talks about Hellenistic Jews, Greek-speaking, and adopted some of the Greek customs. Iron, that's the Roman kingdom, time of Christ, right? The iron and clay together, we don't know. Is it something still to come? Is it papal Rome and the world order? Is it where we are now? We don't know. I like saying we don't know. It's good to live with tension. I was told in seminary that you're supposed to always give an interpretation. Don't leave them wondering. You kidding me? If I don't know, I'm not going to tell you I know. We don't know. Is it some kind of one world order? Here's what I do know. The rock breaks off and it smashes all of these kingdoms, and they're like leaves. No matter how strong they seem, no matter how, man, I got the great military, every kingdom on earth will one day fall. The kingdom that lasts forever is the kingdom of God. And it's this little rock, and it's going to grow huge, and nothing stands against it. God's kingdom it continues to grow. It's stronger. Can't be taken down. There's rising and there's falling, and no one has a say in it. You think you do. Honestly, it's going to happen. You can do everything you want to. You can humble yourself and pray and seek His face and turn from your wicked ways, and there has to be a day that America falls, because no nation lasts. No kingdom lasts outside the kingdom of our God. That's why you don't put your faith in a nation. Love the nation. Pray for the nation. Reach people in the nation. That's awesome. Advocate for good things. No nation lasts. Don't put your faith in a nation or a president or a ruler. Only in Jesus. God has it marked out. The weight of the universe does not fall on your shoulders. Oh man, if we could just this, if we could just that, if we get enough people to vote, and hey, do all the things you want to do, but don't put your faith in that, because no nation lasts. I mean, sure, sit on a wall. Absolutely. Shout the warning. But no nation lasts. The weight of the universe doesn't fall on your shoulders, and the fall of an empire is not yours to halt. You're called to image Christ. That's your call. And yeah, absolutely, man. I'm political in that I look at what's going on, and I want human flourishing, and I want to bless the city that I find myself in, as it says in Jeremiah, while I'm there. I care about my kid. I care about your kids. I care about us. It's not where my faith is. The world's fallen. Yeah. So this is a time, if we're being honest, and if we look at this thing, you may agree, you pray it through and see. I don't have Bible on this. In terms of applying it right now, I think it's a time of great deception. It's crazy, right? I got more information at my fingertips than I've ever had in my life, and I don't know what the truth is in a lot of things. Are these stats right? Are those stats right? You got that scientist? I got this scientist. Well, it's settled science. Dude, there is no such thing. Science begins with a proposition, and you keep testing it. We never know what's settled. That's the whole point of science, is inquiry. I don't know. It's a time of great deception. And in every area of God's created order, it's being turned upside down. God made them male and female. Well, we're not really sure. You know, I'll love you regardless, but God made them male and female. You can identify however you wish. I just know what God made us. We've taken everything and turned it upside down. Not just gender, not just sexuality, but everything. So it's a time of falling away. We've seen this during our during COVID last year, and the continuing results, and I talked to pastors. This is the time of the falling away of the nominals. You know what I'm talking about? I love God. I go to church. It's just what I do. But actually being committed to Jesus, well, you know, I don't know. That thing is beginning to end. Cultural Christianity is ending. It's not a bad thing, but it's also a time, and I still talk to folks, and just recently, within the past couple of months here, that, man, people who have kind of walked away are being brought back to Jesus fully. And are committing fully to Jesus. It's a time where the gathering and Christ is becoming more precious to us than ever before. This is not a bad time. That's what's going on in America today. And you pray it through and you see if you believe that. But I'm seeing the full return of believers to commitment, revival in them. It's a great time. It's also a dangerous time. This is the time we live in. But the weight of the universe doesn't rest on your shoulders. You just be faithful and trust God to do what He's doing. In those days, let's go further. In the days of those kings, the God of the heavens will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, that began with the church. Acts chapter 2. And His kingdom will not be left to another people. This is new. Who's going to set up this kingdom with a new king of all kings? God Himself. He's not just going to allow it. He's going to give power to a ruler, but that ruler is going to be Jesus. He himself will set it up. It's not going to be left to another people for them to mess it up. And Lord knows, human beings, man, if we could, we'd mess up any kingdom there is. We're doing our best to mess up all sorts of stuff as it is. It's not going to be contingent upon the whims, the weaknesses, or the tyrannies of fallen men. It's contingent upon the faithfulness of our King, even when we're unfaithful, because he is good. It will crush all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it itself will endure forever. You're part of that kingdom if you know Jesus, and it will not be shaken. We're in the now and the not yet. We're citizens of the kingdom, and we're waiting for all the rest of it to fall one day. But man, your hope is sure and secure, right? Holy Spirit given as a guarantee, a deposit, guaranteeing your inheritance in the kingdom. You saw a stone break off from the mountain without a hand touching it. It crushed the iron, bronze, fired clay, silver, and gold. The great king has told the king, or the great God has told the king what will happen in the future. The dream is certain, and its interpretation reliable. Okay, king, I've told you. You can finally get some rest. You have to stay up all night trying to figure this thing out. Here's your answer. Here's the thing. Proclamation, we said it last week, proclamation is not salvation. Saying it doesn't mean that you truly believe it. Check it out. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell face down. He worshiped Daniel and gave orders to present an offering and incense to him. And the way it's worded, he's worshiping or paying great respect to Daniel and his God. It's not just, hey, worship me. He's giving these offerings to Daniel's God. The king said to Daniel, truly your God is God of gods and Lord of lords and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery. Your God is amazing. Then the king gave Daniel high honors, many great gifts, made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over the wise men of Babylon, which is going to upset the Chaldeans, which sets you up for what we talked about last week. Daniel didn't exalt himself. Hey, I can't do this, but there is a God. I don't have great wisdom, but there is a God. He didn't use the opportunity to make himself look good. Look at me, King. I'm amazing. God resists the proud. That's active. That's God like strong arming. Yeah, you don't even get to come close to me. God resists the proud. He gives grace to the humble, and he will lift them up. God exalts Daniel through this evil king. Daniel made a request to the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. This is Daniel protecting his buds because they are Jewish. They're second-class citizens, and so now that at least they've got some position. But Daniel remained at the king's court. He's going to use his position to protect the vulnerable, and that's wise. The next stop is what we saw last week, as we're doing this kind of backwards, the 90-foot statue. Because confession of praise does not equal possession of faith. There are a lot of people who say, man, I love God. Oh, yeah, man, I love Jesus. Jesus is awesome. Jesus said, if you love me, you'll obey my commands. There's fruit that comes behind that. Otherwise, it's just lip service, and it means nothing. Fruit takes time, and that's what matters. So let me ask you a couple of questions. Which nation are you going to stop from imploding? How are you going to do that? You know what the answer is? You're not. Do what you can, advocate, pray, love. We don't know how long, another 300 years, another 5 years, another 20 years, we don't know. I read somewhere that empires last about 250 years. If you marked from 1776, and I'm not a prophet of doom, but if you marked from 1776, that's 2026. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I have no idea. You know what I know? I got today, and it's a good day to serve Jesus, right? I got today, and I have the ability to be faithful, and we have amazing freedom right now. We really do. Which nation are you going to defeat or to cause to rise up? You're not. So you pray, you advocate, but you're raised up to glorify God in all things. And so, yeah, warn, awaken, point to danger, reach, praise, point to God, be faithful. Which person are you going to get to start acting the way? Which group of people that you want them to act? You're not, but you can pray and you can introduce them to Jesus and he can transform their heart. That's your call. That's my call. I want to do the other things. Can I just be honest? I do. I can't. So all I can do is point to Jesus. Mirrors reflect, mirrors image. You're the imago Dei, the image of God. You're made in His image. You're made to image God to a watching world, and that's your call, and that's the only call you have. Let me stop here. I'll see if there's questions, comments, and